Portland City Council come to order. We're in the afternoon session. It is Wednesday, July 14th, 2010, 2 p.m. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We'll proceed to the time certain at 2 o'clock, which is the only item we have. Please read the title for report, item number 1036.
Accept the report and recommendations regarding the economic consultant report of the Bureau of Development Services financial plan.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you. In the last couple of years, Paul, yes, please come forward and bring whoever you want. In the last couple of years, we've seen a historic decline in revenues at the Bureau of Development Services that has led to unprecedented layoffs. Well over half of the employees at the Bureau of Development Services by this point in time have been laid off. It's had a number of consequences, but I would tell you that the layoffs at BDS and the economic constraints BDS finds itself in is in fact a result of a larger economic crisis in the country and the world. We have approached depths of the Great Depression of the 30s. In the United States, and the barometer that most accurately gauges that locally is building permits. Mm-hmm. And our building permits have been punched right between the eyes and staggered the Bureau of Development Services. And while they are trying to recover, they certainly haven't dropped to their knees, but in fact are strategically and very much and the leadership that I expect from each of them, seeing this as an opportunity to do things different. And one of the things that we long recognize that needs to be done different is how we issue building permits. We are, as a songwriter once wrote, lost in the 50s at BDS in permitting, and not in the good way that he wrote that song. We are shuttling papers back and forth with shopping carts, restoring plans after they've been approved in storerooms, notwithstanding being surrounded by jurisdictions and the state of Oregon that uses cutting-edge technology for permit issuing. Having said all that, why is now the best time to address that at the depths of one of the worst economic crises and at a time when the BDS actually has to borrow money from the general fund to pay its employees? It's because actually it's the best time to make this change for a variety of reasons. We recognize that we had as many people working at the height of our economic boom as we did, and because we required them to shuffle papers. This system would have allowed us to hire, have on staff far fewer people at the height of the economic boom, thus allowing to put more money into reserves, thus hopefully cushioning this hard landing that we've all experienced. There are collective bargaining issues implementing a system like this when you're at peak capacity, because the result of this system is it will be a more efficient permitting system, was another way of saying we don't need as many people to operate as at peak capacity than we were if we have an efficient system like this in place. So what the council asked for and what you're going to be getting a report now on is, you know, how is the Bureau doing in terms of its projections of its own economic recovery, which are intrinsically tied to the national economy's pulse? The fortunes of BDS are determined well beyond what the City of Portland does. It is determined by the National Recovery Act. It is determined by stimulus spending. It's determined by the ability of banks to make commercial loans, for developers to dig holes in the ground to get permits, and we are just a small piece of that. So projecting what that means in terms of the future is more art than it is science, and thus you won't get anybody of any credibility to say this is what's going to happen by this date. That they won't put that in writing. I understand why, but what we can expect is some parameters as to how we're going to get out of the hole that we're in, and I think that's what you have before you today. So without further ado, I introduce Paul Scarlett, the director of BDS, to walk us through this report.
Wonderful. Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Good afternoon. Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. I'm pleased to go through the report that was produced by Jerry Johnson from Johnson Reed LLC. This is a vital piece of information that connects back to As Commissioner Leonard is saying, the Bureau's finances, and on a daily basis, we're monitoring finances. On a monthly basis, we're monitoring finances. On a yearly basis, we're monitoring finances. As part of our budget process and requirements, we're required to do two things because we're an operating bureau. One, we have to submit and provide a balanced budget, 100% cost recovery. And additionally, we're required to show a five-year financial plan that indicates growth projections and any adjustments in the economy that allows for us to continue to operate efficiently. This has been more a challenging time or experience would be an understatement for the last couple of years. We have struggled. We have realized opportunities as part of those struggles in terms of being more efficient. And the plan to improve our operation through technology is not something that's new, that was discussed 2 years ago, 1 year ago. It's been something that's been discussed for many, many years. And we're at that juncture now where we feel pursuing the technology in the form of increase in our ability to provide the service to our customers via electronic plan review, remote technology that allows for inspectors to do activities in the field, and for our customers and anyone interested in our processes to access the information from their home rather than coming down, reducing travel miles, reducing time. The analysis that was performed, it was for us, we're pleased that the information shared back from Mr. Johnson indicated that the Bureau, though was off, was within the realm of reasonable projections. The reduction in our staff by half, which is about 160 employees over the last year, is an indication of work going down, but more importantly, the revenues that has been more challenged. And the revenues is tied to the valuation of the projects. So in March and February of this year, Council, you ask us to get a third-party review of our projections. Our financial plan was presented in February. The cost of the IT improvement is about $5.2 million. The concerns, if you will, about the Bureau's ability to repay a loan, because we have to rely on a loan to purchase this technology, where's that confidence level? How real is it when we're challenged on a monthly basis to meet cost recovery to retain staff? And so the report that is in front of you, which includes information on some of the questions that were asked, such as what are the indicators that should be reviewed? The Bureau has used a number of indicators, including business model and some residential modeling, with construction rate indexes, and we have come within fairly close realization of projections. An example, if you will, we reduced our staff last November, and from November through May, our projections, we were off about $150,000 each month. That's a lot of money in the context we're dealing with because we're unable to retain the staff. But it's also minimal difference in terms of a larger context of projections. So we're within the ballpark. The problem is we didn't have much cushion. We didn't have any cushion. In fact, we had to get a loan, like Commissioner Leonard said, to continue our operation. So we made additional adjustments, and unfortunately it's at the expense of laying off more staff. But as of end of June, we're now operating at 100% cost recovery, and the projections for another year is seeing that there will be 100% cost recovery because, of course, the biggest costs we have are our employees. And so come in the next year, we should be in a good position to start hiring back employees, and a part of their ability to hire back and to afford the payment is part of what Mr. Johnson reviewed. So rather than going into a lot of more information, I'll give you that context. And Denise Klein is, excuse me real quick, we want to make sure that all the requirements that you ask us are being met. So part of the context is, how do we move forward with the information that Mr. Johnson provided us with budget notes that you have included as part of the approval of BDS's budget in May of this year. So can you just quickly go through the steps, and then we'll get to Mr. Johnson's. Okay. Thanks.
Sure. So part of the issue is that we have a budget note that has quite a number of parameters in it. Is that what you wanted me to
yes.
talk about?
Okay.
A number of parameters in it that the council has asked us to respond to prior to embarking on the IT project. And then there are recommendations that Mr. Johnson has made. So attached in your handout and also in what was given to you with the council packet is a proposed work plan on how to merge those two things. You asked us to do a cost-benefit analysis on the project, and that's something that we are working on. And you asked that we make sure that we set aside enough resources to ensure the payback of the loan, and that certainly is what we're going to be doing. We certainly don't want to buy something we can't afford. So we're working on that. Then you asked that we present a new financial plan and that the council has to approve the project before we actually proceed and expend money on the project. What we're proposing is that we update our current financial plan, that we get input from from some experts in both real estate and in economic forecasting, as well as our own internal budget office. And that we use that as well as leading indicators to update our financial plan. There's a recommendation that we have that will be coming, I believe, from Mr. Johnson, that we develop a model, a real estate projection model that would run parallel to our current model. And we're more than happy to do that, but the time frame is very tight to be able to do that. It's a huge, huge undertaking for us, especially with our limited staffing. So what we're proposing is to get data and information to help us update our financial plan, but that actually doing that model, that we do that with our next financial plan cycle, which would be, you know, turned in January. The review committee I kind of spoke to in the budget note, it talks about a review committee that would have real estate expertise and a person from the Small Business Advisory Committee, SBAC, and a person from Development Review Advisory Committee, DRAC. And we would like to expand that to also include the recommendations coming from Mr. Johnson that says we ought to also have experts in economic forecasting. So still have an advisory committee, but just expand the membership of that. So those are our thoughts, our preliminary thoughts on that.
Just on that point, I mean, mm-hmm. I think the intent was 5 to 7 people,
right,
including DRAC and SBAC.
Correct.
So, yeah.
That's my understanding.
There should be at least five other people.
But the budget notes also said that the chief administrative office would be convening that. So have you had discussions with them?
We have, and we're yes. right now working on ideas for membership of the group, planning for August to bring them together. Is there anything else you want me to go over before we turn it over to Jerry?
We have Andrew Scott and Hank McDonald that can provide responses to any questions you might have. But yeah, we'd like to hear from Mr. Johnson now. Thanks.
Thanks. Jerry Johnson with Johnson Reed. We were asked to do a number of things with this. First of all, take a look at the research test, confirm the programmatic assumptions in the forecasts in the next 5 years, inherent in the budget. Take a look at the 5-year financial plan and provide comments on that and recommendations for improvements. Review of the fee structure that's being proposed and impact of that, and provide some input on the overall economic outlook for the residential commercial development of the city of Portland for the next 24 months, which I think is going to be the most difficult period forecasting. First of all, some general comments. The forecast that was produced by BDS, first of all, is transparent and based on our review of similar forecasts, really sort of reflects more or less a best practices type forecast, an econometric model based on fairly typical types of factors one would value and evaluate when trying to forecast the future. We saw it as a good faith effort going forward. The real difficulty we have with this model, first of all econometric models out there right now have missed the magnitude of the last downturn. Almost everybody gets the direction. The magnitude's been a little bit more difficult. This is, in economic parlance, what they call an off-model event, which means the models didn't get it. They expected something not quite the depth that we've seen. One of the things that I think is particularly unique to the BDS situation is, since BDS is based on development activity, it's really more tied to a real estate cycle than a business cycle. And one of the things we found in reviewing the model that's being used, it's more typical, again, it's common in the industry or for these types of departments to do a model that really is reflecting the business cycle, but the real estate cycle does not always correspond with the business cycle. In fact, it tends to anticipate business cycles and end before the business cycles do as well, although occasionally they won't always follow the same path. If you look at residential construction, the last downturn in the business cycle in the early 2000s, the residential market didn't see any of that whatsoever, while the commercial industrials did. These things don't always track, and one of the things we were recommending, which was alluded to already, is a model that basically take a look at it from a real estate perspective. Real estate cycles are fairly well documented in things that are tracked by a number of different outside groups, and the modeling is a little bit different than a standard business model, business cycle model. And because of that, we'd like to see sort of a dual model structure where we can try to anticipate these events beforehand. I mean, it's one thing to say that what was done is consistent with the norm and the model misses these things, but I don't think we should end there. I think we should try to figure out how to better anticipate the unanticipated issues. And I think looking in hindsight, and again, economists are much better at autopsies and forecasts, we can go back and say, here's where we missed, what we did wrong, what we should pick up on the backside. And what we're looking at is basically some parallel modeling structures going forward for BDS to give a little bit more assurance and maybe a second trigger point to raise the flag when something like this may be coming forward. And a lot of these things are things that we tend to see in real estate markets, where we get an overbuild situation, which then collapses the markets, then stops all construction activity, which is fairly similar to what we saw in this last downturn on the real estate side. Again, these can be seen in indicators that aren't being tracked, and we'd like to see those added to the indicators tracked going forward. The City of Portland's development environment is quite unique, even within the region, because most of the development opportunities are going to be infill redevelopment sites in the City of Portland. These, on the margin, we think are going to add increasingly to a marginally more expensive situation, cost recovery situation for BDS, because the cost recovery on smaller scale infill redevelopment is less lucrative for services like BDS, and it's going to be more difficult to recover the fees. I think the changes in the fee structure that are being proposed are actually consistent with that, because we're trying to change the weighting. It's much more expensive to do these small scale projects than a large condominium project, which we're probably not going to see as many in the future as far as a percentage of overall development mix. Because of that, I think the cost recovery for the smaller projects is going to have to be shifted a bit, and I do believe the fee structure is responsive to what I think is we should be expecting going forward. We took a look at the service schedules for BDS, and from our expectation, our experience with the development industry, we don't see the fees as onerous enough to actually cause a life safety issue by people actually avoiding fees. We think as long as service can be maintained or improved to the extent that timing is predictable for inspections and they get done on time, that's more of an issue than the actual fee at this point in time. So I don't think the fee is going to be a major impediment, and I don't think it's going to be a lot of avoidance because of the increase in fees. In reality, relative to the cost of construction projects, they still remain relatively small and somewhat negligible. More the time issue of waiting for the inspection and inspections not being reliable are more of an important factor to the production of real estate. We took a look at the recommendations coming out of this. One was some suggested changes in the indicators for the model. I do believe the models can be improved. Again, they're using an econometric model. They actually, despite the downturn, they actually overrode their model, which they thought was too optimistic, and sort of dumbed it down to some extent and dropped a lower rate of expected growth, which still overshot the market. Again, econometric models tend to miss on the edges. The very highs and the very lows, they tend to miss. They do really well when things are just sort of chugging along, but they tend to miss the amplitude of the wave. We do think the business cycle forecasting should be should be combined with forecasting real estate cycles by product types. I think that would be very useful. It's actually not particularly difficult to do, although it's something that hasn't historically been done. It's something that I think is more relevant to BDS than the traditional business cycle models. We'd like to see some additional peer reviews from agencies that are doing a lot more forward-looking. State Economist's Office, a lot of public-private forecasters that are out there right now. I think it's useful for additional peer review just to take a look at the assumptions and give a little bit more assurance, a little bit look over the shoulder. In addition, I believe the real estate industry can provide some assistance there because they can typically anticipate or they see some of the trends before they start showing up in the indicators. And that's, by and large, our results. We thought the model on its own would look like a fairly strong model. It's just that clearly the model missed, and it missed in a significant way. And it wasn't alone in missing in that significant way. What we're looking for is ways to try to improve the model on the margin. So unanticipated issues like this are more anticipated in the future.
Council discussion.
Some questions. I appreciate your work on the report, but it doesn't really answer the questions that I was hoping to get answered. Specific recommendations for approval for improvements in the five-year financial plan.
Mm-hmm.
What are your recommendations for how specifically on how to improve it?
Recommendations specifically for the plan is primarily related to the modeling activity. To create a model that is more predictive. I think the model right now, as far as the forecasted revenues, seem consistent with what we've had internally in our office. So I think the numbers are about right, but they primarily became because of an override where they took the numbers down to reflect more current information. I think on a go-forward basis, the real recommendation is to change the modeling structure so we're relying less on business cycle modeling and more on real estate cycle modeling.
And did you tell them how to do that? What specifically you'd like in the model to make sure that it's more accurate in the future?
We have pulled out some specific pieces. I've actually been talking with Denise about helping them specify some specific changes in the models we go forward. There's many models on business cycles, but they can actually be fairly simple because they're just very much related to supply-demand balances over time and replacement costs. Real estate basically follows a cycle where the achievable pricing in terms of rents or sales prices well below replacement costs, which induces a lot of new supply, at which point they overbuild the market, which then collapses price points, which makes no new construction viable, and then we sort of reset until the prices get back to the point where we overbuild the market again. It's a fairly predictable cycle, and what you're really monitoring with those things are standing vacancy rates and pipelines relative to demand so we can see when we're heading off the cliff. Again, it's always more important to see before the cliff as opposed to after.
Right. So we know that the model, that even with adjustment, didn't capture it.
Right.
So have you given them specific, put this in, take this out, so that it's more accurate in the future?
Yes. We actually provided some pieces that come off the forward leading indicator series that is done by the State Economist's Office, as well as a parallel one by Tim Dewey, University of Oregon, that we thought they should implement into their modeling structure so that they have a little bit more of a forward look. Otherwise, it's predictive, but it's not predictive far enough in advance to anticipate these things. At the same time, we're taking a look at additional variables that will take a look at the real estate issue. Because, again, the real estate, particularly in this last downturn, crashed well before the business cycle crashed and probably was one of the reasons the business cycle did go down.
Okay, and there's a glitch in how it's been reported. This doesn't have any information in it. But this is really the relevant graph in terms of the historic and the projected revenue, which we will. So if we could get that information, because what I was hoping for from this report was to tell me this is what BDS's model projects, and this is reasonable or not reasonable. When do we get back into the black? How much do we get back into the black? Your report says that on a percentage basis, which I'm not sure what that means, revenues are expected to begin increasing again in financial year 12-13. Mm-hmm. So how much money? Thank you.
Sorry. I think we all have that. Yeah, we had a printing glitch there somewhere, including Mr. Scarlett.
Yes.
So that is something that we'll all need to look at, and we're just accepting the report today so that we can do. Thank you. So in terms of how in millions of dollars, and also in terms of you looked at the fee structure, which is one of the charges that you were asked to do.
Yes.
So you mentioned about, as we all know, that the smaller projects don't have as big a percentage margin of revenue back to the city as the larger projects. So given the new fee structure, do these smaller projects break even, come in under, come in over? What's your analysis on that?
The smaller projects are variable, so it's hard to know on a project by project. On average, the smaller projects have been subsidized by the larger projects in the old fee structure, and that the actual cost of these inspections for the smaller projects exceeded the expenses that were being incurred by BDS, whereas the larger projects were offsetting that. This changes that relationship to some extent. As far as full fee recovery, it's going to be a project by project. We're definitely moving in a direction that is positive, but we don't have some detailed breakouts of exactly what the costs are for the smaller projects.
I thought that was one of your charges, though, because we adjusted the fee structure, mm-hmm. and I thought you were looking at how much of a difference did that make, and if we had had those fees in place in the past year, how much closer to breaking even would we have been?
I didn't know that was in the direct piece. We were taking a look at the fee structure as far as percentage of construction costs and ideal, looking for avoidance issues. We did not backwards check it against the actual activity to see if the fee recovery would have been similar. We would not have still had a positive situation because the primary impact from BDS's position wasn't a drop in the small recoveries, it was a drop in the large projects.
But one of the charges that you in the report says review the fee structure for all programs in the fund to ascertain that reasonable fee increases are being proposed to recover the cost of services, including a proper level of reserve for each program. Do we know how much these fee increases will increase the reserves in each program?
We only have the forecasts from the budget, which the budget was making the assumptions. And the fees basically take a look at a profile of anticipated development activity, which seemed consistent with what we would expect. And so in the budget, it's already incorporating the change in the fees.
Correct.
Commissioner Fitz, we do have that information. I didn't bring it with me here, but we do have our projections based on each program and the impact for the current fiscal year on the fees.
That was one of the charges of this independent report, though, to check and make sure that your assumptions and calculations were correct.
I think his charge was a little more global and sort of higher level than the questions that you're asking, which are getting into a lot more detail than I think that his report got into at this point. But we do have data and information on the fee increases and what the impact is, and what Mr. Johnson looked at was an overall impact on the current fee, or the fees for fiscal year 9-10, and then the proposal that we had for 10-11, and are we going in the right direction with how we're changing our fee structure? And I think he confirmed that we are going in the right direction. To answer one of your questions on, we still know that for our minimum fees that our cost recovery is not at 100%, but we're planning over the next several years to raise that minimum fee to get it to be 100%. So we for sure know that for some of those minimum fees that that it's not full cost recovery, but we just at this point didn't want to impact our permit applicants in this first year with a huge fee increase.
Right. I appreciate all the work that's been done. I was looking for more information on the projections and particularly the five-year forecast, and wondering if we decide later in the year to loan the money from the general fund to purchase this system, when is it reasonable to expect that it might be paid back?
And that information we actually are working on. Part of the issue is coming up with the cost estimates for the system itself. We're reviewing and redoing our financial forecast as for the next 5 years, this year and the next 5 years, and also re-looking at our costs in terms of what staffing level do we project in the next several years. So that's information that we would bring to you at the end of August when we come back to council.
And that's my final concern, and this is directed to staff, and that is the timeline for coming back to us. It's already the middle of July. and to convene a stakeholder group, including somebody from the Small Business Advisory Council and from DRAC. Well, it sounds like the may or may not be two stakeholder groups. There's the one that the CAO was going to convene, and then there's the real estate and stakeholders group. And to me, those things are maybe a little different, but I'm open to being convinced that they could be combined. To get those folks to meet and do that kind of in-depth analysis by the end of August seems to be an overly ambitious timeline to me.
And the focus is to come back, and of course that is a piece of it. The analysis to pursue the recommendation from Mr. Johnson utilizing real estate modeling would be something we're asking that we include in our financial budget plan, which is due in January. And so the committee that's formed would assist us in getting that information to be submitted during that time frame. And we want to talk, when we come back, more about the IT, the bond council information, debt service, debt, what's it called?
Debt
management information about the ability to, what money can be utilized to pay for the IT system. And so it's a number of pieces that's moving in a particular direction.
And then what about the challenge that you have had? You've suffered such great staff layoffs, and
yes,
the staff are doing a magnificent job of getting the permits out and doing the inspections and following up on nation's concerns regardless. There's a limit to how long too few people can keep doing that.
Right.
And particularly if construction starts picking up and we do want to keep the permits flowing, what is the plan for figuring out how to divide up the revenue that's going to be coming in to putting some into reserve so that you can start looking to pay this back versus hiring back staff?
Right. Fortunately, we have very good workload data that comes in and is captured on a daily basis. And the ability, there is a relationship between how many people can do how many inspections, let's say. And so the number is coming in. What's not coming in a corresponding rate is the revenues to support and offset the workload. So I am reviewing that very closely on a daily basis and making the determination whether to recall a position. We have that option that's available because of the laid off employees. So we'll be looking at recalling to meet the service demands and at the same time looking at our reserve goals of trying to put away as much as we can. And so there's a fine balance between how many people do we call back and, based on the economic crisis indicators, how long are any blips going to be sustained? So you might call someone back for a month, but then things go down. So watching it very carefully, but the ability to turn around inspections within a certain time frame or plan review within a certain time frame is dependent on the number of staff we have, which is, again, dependent on our ability to afford the staff. And so right now, after laying off the fourth round, an additional 16 positions, we are now just experiencing 100% cost recovery. And that's projected to retain all the way through next June, except for the winter months, which historically have gone down. And so if we're exceeding 100% cost recovery on a monthly basis, that's surplus funds that we can use to recall positions or to put into the reserve to help us pay for IT system down the road.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I know you and Commissioner Leonard both have been working really hard to keep morale up and to be sensitive to
it's
the timing
challenge
of both this. Yes, indeed. And both you and the employees, I think, have risen to that challenge magnificently, and I greatly appreciate that.
Thanks.
I understand that this money being borrowed from the general fund is for this specific project, and that some of the money will be hired to be able to enter the data to get the system running. And so that alleviates one of my concerns from earlier of the year, that we wouldn't be asking the same planners and others who are working at the permits to then also be doing data entry. I think,
right.
And I know you will be very sensitive to the timing of which ones are implemented first. And while I concur with what's been said as far as now being the time to that we can look at implementing a system like this without making labor cuts,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be a while before we're back up to anything like the level of staffing that you had before. And so to my mind, there's no particular rush to start this project while you're still in the the rest of the troubles. But we can discuss that as when you bring back to your revenue forecast and such. Right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for a very clear, lucid presentation. I have two questions off of what you said. One has to do with the notion that the fees generated from some larger projects ended up sort of, in effect, cross-subsidizing some smaller projects where the cost recovery was not as was underfunded.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, was that in your opinion, was that an intentional policy, or is that just effectively how the fee structure worked?
I think it's effectively how it worked. I mean, there's been some very large projects that I think when the fee structure was initially implemented probably wouldn't have been anticipated to begin with. The relationship between the level of large projects to smaller projects had gotten very heavy on the large projects a few years ago, going back to a more traditional smaller project bias in the city of Portland. But you know, house by house, inspection recovery can be very different. But certainly on the larger projects with same floor plans on every floor and recovery based on percentage of values, it makes it more difficult to get the smaller ones full cost recovery, whereas the larger ones are more predictable.
If I could add to that also, the fee schedule that we use is not the rates themselves, but the sort of the parameters of it is dictated by the state of Oregon. And it actually is a model that's used on a national level. So our situation with larger projects really bringing in more revenues than smaller projects is pretty much the way it is in our industry on a national level.
In specific example, in reviewing the fee schedule this year, I believe the minimum permit fee was around $44, and we, through analysis, determined it should be about $90 to offset the expenses. So as Denise indicated earlier, part of our processes in the budget planning process is to increase fees gradually to help mitigate some of the impacts on our customers. So we've gone up to $70 as a minimum right now. And so that is projected, and you, Commissioner Fritz, you're asking what the fee increases. When we presented our budget back in February, fee increases were included at about 5%. That was anticipated to generate $1.5 million. We raised it to 8% after talking with Dragon that we needed to recalculate. And the projection from activities as projected now will generate $1.8 million. And that will go towards expenses as well, but any surplus will go into the revenue. So fee increases is a big part of what helps us to stay solvent or to close the gap between expense and revenues.
I guess my second question has to do with just some lessons learned in the course of the work that you've done, looking at the five-year financial plan and some of the assumptions. I mean, obviously, if this was a science, we'd all figure it out and make a lot of money in Wall Street and other markets. So we understand that these are best kind of projections we can make, and then events intervene. But in the course of your work, did you were you also asked to look at the relationship between the forecasting that's done, the fee structures, and what a prudent reserve policy would be?
You know, we didn't take a look at, you know, you probably would take a look at, statistically, you can take a look at standard deviations or variances and take a look at some level of, there's a certain level of uncertainty in all forecasts, certainly, and we're probably at the absolute peak of the uncertainty in this last downturn, because, again, this is hopefully a once-in-a-career event, for me, at least, but as we take a look at these, and this is something the states also, I sit with the state, the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors for the state, and they're spending a lot of time dealing with issues like the rainy day fund and reserves and how much reserves should be set aside. And it bounces around. There's huge levels of variability in what people think. I mean, you know, the state's talking like 8% is one of the things that get kicked around a lot, or up to 8 to 14%, and it bounces around where reserve funds should be and how much volatility we should expect in these funds. Again, on the revenue side, we miss low and high. What you're looking for is consistent biases, so you can keep those reserves somewhat tight as long as you're not consistently missing low or consistently missing high. And there's some level of flexibility in between. You need some reserves to carry you through those times. Real estate cycles typically go on 7-year periods, and when you're going to be out of balance, it's probably only going to be a 2 or 3-year period. So I'd be taking a look at something, even if it's a 10% reserve, you're talking about 3 years out of 7, so maybe 40% of the time you'd have a variance that would be substantial enough you have to do something with. You could come up with a number with that. We haven't seen a lot of people who have, there's a hard, fast rule that we haven't run into as far as reserves. I think it's a concept that's useful to take a look at, though, because we do recognize that this is a particularly city a particular city service that has unusual variability in its revenue.
Yeah, and I appreciate, I think I understood most of what you just said, not being a trained economist, but I think I understood the gist of what you just said. And it occurs to me that there are potentially three questions there that are of interest to us. One is, what is the appropriate level of reserves for a agency of this size, given the kinds of projected fluctuations? The second is, how much of those reserves would you anticipate being used, drawn down for certain kinds of events? And what are those events, and what would the policy allow in the ordinary course of how much of a drawdown? And number three, since it's a bureau that is dependent on the fees and certain things that come in and is not funded through the general fund, what is the trigger in terms of the system that's set up in the reserves so that the council is aware of a problem, recognizing that the council is going to be the backstop with general fund dollars if you reach a certain critical juncture, or potentially as a backstop? So those seem to me to be three questions that arise when we look at reserve funds.
I would point out, if I could just point out, that at the beginning of the downturn, the BDS reserve fund was over 25% of its operating fund. I think the most wildest conservative projections would never call for reserves as high as we had, and we are where we are because of the absolute free fall of the economy that nobody predicted. We expected the reserves to be used to bridge us from one end of the downturn to the uptick at the other end, as we had done for decades and decades. Didn't happen.
I think it's almost like using a flood insurance analogy. This has been the 100-year event, and so the reserves were inadequate, and people don't set aside for the 100-year event. They do set aside for the 10-year events. And so I do think you can get a prudent reserve fund that makes sense, and 25% is higher than I would have expected would be even prudent. But, you know, again, we hit the 100-year event.
And I guess looking forward, and this is not science, this is Monday morning quarterbacking, and also this exercise, as I understand it, is to provide useful information for doing the next 5 years and just learning from whatever the experience that we've gone through. Is, though, what is the trigger that causes a broader examination of a precipitous decline in reserves at what point does the trigger cause you to consider earlier layoffs or other kinds of actions, as opposed to hoping that at some point, you know, there's a turnaround and so it's just a cyclical event? I don't know the answer to that, but it's suggested.
The trigger we have in place is 2 to 3 accounting periods, which is what the reserve would typically cover. So if we start dwindling on a consistent basis, that is a trigger. And Commissioner Leonard and I saw the trigger, and we mitigate as best as we can, utilizing reserve and implementing some cost-saving measures. But it is quite a nimble situation.
And what we expected, just as a retro look at what happened, what we expected to have happen when we started taking some of those measures in September of 2008, I believe it was, was that by May, what had historically occurred every May in every building season for which we had records was an upturn in permits, commercial permits. Didn't happen. Right. In fact, the whole summer of 2009 didn't happen. In fact, a declining percentage of revenues each month, which throughout it isn't just the city of Portland's, it was the region's, it was the state, it was the nation's model for what happened. in the construction industry, which still continues to confound us. I mean, we still have no benchmark with which to measure what's actually happened against historically.
Just thank you, that's very helpful. And I guess just to make sure I understand the one other related piece, and it's perhaps a preview of what I think is to come in our agenda, is it correct to say that the health of BDS is a function both of the right cost recovery model on the revenue side plus the reserves being replenished at an appropriate level? Do both have to occur in order for you to say it's back to health?
I would think you'd need a healthy reserve again before you felt like, you know, it was a stable, reliable, because we will still go through cycles. There's going to be up and down. There'll be need for reserve. Again, on the Monday morning quarterbacking thing, since I'll go with that as well, because in hindsight, we take a look at what could have been anticipated on the commercial side. People who track the real estate cycles on the commercial side called this real estate cycle done on the commercial side in 2007 and just expected nothing would be happening for a while. So we've got some continuing activity, but from a real estate model as opposed to a business cycle model, looking backwards, that model would have done a better job forecasting than a business cycle model, which is one of the reasons we're talking about moving towards more of that model for BDS, since their revenues are more tied to real estate activity than business cycle activity.
Interesting. Thank you.
Which, to be clear, would have just had predicted what we ended up doing was something we were going to do as opposed to just having it drop in our lap. I mean, the result would have been ultimately the same.
There's not much you can do. You coming. Could have done it earlier. Some cutting, yeah. That's about the only difference.
Yeah.
Commissioner Salzman.
So moving to more of a real estate model, what are some of the variables that would be included that aren't, for instance, included in our financial forecast?
I think a lot of the stuff that's readily trackable outside of, you know, inventory in the pipeline coming through, actual hard construction starts and expected product introductions, you can track things like, you know, market occupancy rates, market rent levels. What we're typically looking for is when, for example, an office, overall office vacancies rise over 10%, we start seeing softening of rents and we start seeing a reduction in new construction. That can be anticipated well in advance because we can take a look. Even before it hasn't gotten there, if we see a pipeline that says there's 500,000 square feet of new office space coming to the market, when it hits the market, we expect the office vacancy rate to go to 18%. Therefore, we can expect that's probably the end of that construction cycle until another 5 years when we absorb that space and are ready for another cycle. Those things can be seen looking forward. And if we talk with the brokerage community, and see, no one trusts the brokerage community because they always assume they have cross purposes, but at the same time, they have excellent data. And it's data that's readily available. And it can help you look forward in that same way.
So this data is readily available from, like, brokerage firms and
sure.
people who really...
Well, some of it's, you know, if you're talking about a macro level for the Portland metropolitan area, a lot of it's distributed freely, not building by building, but, you know, the broader forecast pieces, almost every brokerage firm has newsletters that come out on a quarterly basis.
So I guess my final question is for Paul or Denise, and I guess I'm a little confused on the 5-7-person committee that's supposed to look at the future and predict whether BDS's ability to repay a loan. Does that report to, I thought it was supposed to report to the Chief Administrative Officer, or OMF?
We've had conversation with Andrew Scott, and we are working through the budget note we respect, and we are looking at that in identifying groups and individuals to be part of that committee. However, Mr. Johnson's also made a recommendation of a committee which would focus on real estate modeling. And so we felt rather than having two parallel committees, why not meld them together? And if it meant going from 7 to 9 members, it's a recommendation we plan to make to you by the end of August, how to satisfy the budget note as well as a recommendation in Mr. Johnson's report.
I actually have a copy of the budget note that I want to pass out because it is pretty specific, saying that the CIO is going to convene. And I know I've had my tussles with budget notes in my bureaus in the past so that I know that we want to make sure that we honor them. It seems to me that there might be benefit just hearing what you're talking about in having the two committees, and hopefully they both come to the same conclusion. That would be very strong evidence that everybody's looking at it the same way. Doing it separately.
There possibly could be. With discussion with Ken Russ, which has been fairly preliminary, not necessarily ruling out anything, when we saw this and we had discussions with Commissioner Leonard, part of it is the information that would be evaluated, analyzed. If you have both committees looking at the same thing, why not meld them? And so we have a more robust committee that includes parties from all the different entities. So it's, you know, it's still in discussion. We haven't presented back to you how we're satisfying that budget note. We're only discussing some options.
Okay. And when you come back with the financial forecast, this graph that we now have is, now I've had a chance to look at, is really helpful.
Okay.
And it shows that the program revenue is going to be the same in January of 2012 as it was in 2008. So it's taking it, right? I'm getting a nod there. So that, but we know that because you've had such big staffing cuts, that the same level of revenue is actually going to result in a greater level of reserves or of excess. So that information would be helpful to me when you come back with your budget forecast to know, because of the savings in staffing, and include in that, please, your projection for adding back staffing to make it the workload more tolerable and get more of the things done that we haven't been able to get done,
right,
like some of the inspections. That component will let me know what is the excess that then could be dedicated to this new system.
On a yearly basis from here on out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can only calculate till end of next July in terms of what we're seeing now, but we're projecting over the next 5 years what we would have. So we'll have that information.
Right. And I have for my colleagues, and I'm going to get some copies made. Mayor Adams and I got from MPAC a couple of last month, June 9th. There was a panel of experts who gave us a regional economic outlook, which has some exceptionally good information, which I'll get to you. And and it too forecasts about 2012 or even 2014 is when we're going to be back into a more robust economy. So I'm still leery about this expenditure at this time, you know, not knowing how long it's going to take before the construction industry in particular rebounds to its pre-recession levels.
Right, and that's information that bond council will provide us in terms of paying off a bond, which corresponds then to the reserve and the bill recovery. We'll provide that information in end of August because a number of things need to line up. Because part of paying off the loan is, of course, based on the reserve and the construction activities. And
I'd like to address that specifically, the paying off of the loan, the whole concept of loan. I toyed with the concept of whether to ask for a loan or just ask for an outright grant from the general fund to pay for this. And the reason is the city can't afford not to do this. There is no other large metropolitan city in the United States that has such an archaic form of permitting than does the city of Portland. There's no other way to put it. I've, since being in office, I've had a number of industries come my way, usually through the mayor's office or PDC, that are considering doing a development here in Portland. They have never once, in the dozens and dozens of meetings, and oftentimes successful meetings, have never once said, your SDC fees are high, can you cut me a deal if I locate my business here? They've never said, your permit fees are high, I will locate here if you can cut me a deal. What they have consistently to a person said with every serious inquiry is, I am concerned about the time frame it's going to take to me to get my plans reviewed, approved, get a building permit, get an inspector out to inspect. What assurances can you give me that I can get through this process as quickly as possible? In those instances, I've had to call Paul. These guys will sit here and testify to you all day long, them, and say, with this particular group, I've made these particular assurances, and I'm sorry this is going to impact your other workload. And sometimes I'm not that polite about it when I say that. I'm sorry it's going to impact your other workload. But this group, we've made this assurances to, and we have to get them here in the city. They provide jobs, they provide construction, blah, blah, blah. We need to get them here. That comes at the expense of somebody else in the line who, frankly, I've pushed out of the front of the line back, so that these folks who are contemplating coming here or oftentimes expanding their business here will sign the deal. That's the deal. So this $5.2 million, really, in this economic times, I'd actually agree with my colleagues at this point, we really can't afford to pay for it. The city council should pay for it outright because of the much money as we loan for economic development, for a variety of functions at times I've voted for that are questionable. This is the most certain economic development tool that is possible for the city to assure new businesses that want to move here or businesses that want to expand here, they can get through the permitting process sitting at their office, sitting at home, without bringing down plans, without interacting with anybody in person, do it all online. Not to mention the convenience for the person at home that wants to add an addition and wants to do the plans themselves. They can do it all online, be assisted online, get their permit issued all online. So this is an important discussion. The economic development tools are important discussions to have them, but they are what they are. And at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is not whether or not BDS can accurately predict what the future economic activity is going to be in the building industry, but rather or not we can as expeditiously as possible deliver permits and get inspections done. We're talking about the difference between inspectors today as we sit here, going out in their cars with a card, 3x5 card, making notes on their card, going back to their office, entering the data in their computer, and then filing the card in a file. And if that guy's on vacation or sick leave and somebody needs to pick up his inspection workload, they go to his file card, they pull out the file card, see what his notes were, and they go out to the site and try to best guess versus these handheld tablets that most other communities use. And now where it's all done online, inspectors actually can be out in the field and be notified online, go to this place, or getting ready to pour a foundation, they need you there immediately, all of which this new system will give us the capacity to do. We cannot leave that aspect that I've just described out of this discussion. It isn't just about the ability of BDS to repay the loan. It's about getting technology in place that gets us up to speed with Hillsborough, with Beaverton, with the state of Oregon, and every other large city I know of in the United States.
Commissioner, is this considered an amendment to the outline we have? Because there's a whole section on the debt requirements for getting this done, and we're now just shifting to...
I just want to put it in. I just want to put this discussion in context, and it's easy to get lost about what the larger goal is. And the larger goal is to keep up with the rest of the development world in the region, if not the country.
Other discussion? All right, we have more to hear from. Is that right? More people to hear from or no?
No. First I want to acknowledge the good work Mr. Johnson has done. And we appreciate the good review and recommendations. We're amenable to incorporating those recommendations, and we're hopeful that Council will accept the report as well as the attachment, which includes the outline for how we move forward. If you do want to hear a little bit more about the IT process, how it's going with Bond Council and discussions with the state, Hank McDonald, who's the lead manager on that project, is here, as well as Andrew Scott from OMF, who can speak to some of the arrangements.
I would like them to come forward to keep this entire discussion in context. Okay. It's important to know why we're doing this. Right. So if Andrew and Hank would come forward.
That'd be great. Thank you. I think why don't you go ahead and tell us the sort of update on the IT technology and the purchases information.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Hank McDonald with Bureau of Development Services, Senior Program Manager. In the last couple of months since I last visited you and spoke with you about what our proposal was for the information technology package, we have had numerous meetings with other Bureau work groups within the City of Portland and with the State of Oregon, and also with Excella with regards to how we might strategize moving forward and improving our process and how we issue permits, how we do plan reviews, and how we perform inspections.
What is Excella?
Beg your pardon?
You said Excella?
Excella, A-C-C-E-L-A, Excella.
What is it?
Is it an acronym?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the organization that the State of Oregon entered into a contract with, and the statewide e-permitting system is that system, and that is the system that we are looking to implement in the City of Portland. Okay. I apologize for not defining that. In any event, we're working with the State of Oregon and Excella on how we would strategize improving our processes and how we would implement this new technology. There are a number of options at that point. It is a decision point, and one of the decision points is, do we purchase the technology and do we host it here at the City of Portland and make it our own and integrate with the State of Oregon, or do we actually go through the State of Oregon as a full